Charles. Man talking.
I forgot to add cord. So. Okay, we'll call the meeting of the. Who's my gavel? We can call the meeting to order of the Board of Governors for the DC Bar for September 19, 2023. And I have a brief, real brief president's report. I'll just talk real quickly. We have Rob Weiner on, and he's with the ABA. He's about at the time we thought, but I thought he could go first to talk about the ABA events or his report that he had for the DC Bar. So let me just give a brief report, and that is since our last meeting in July, right? We really rolled into August, and a few of us from the bar went to Denver. And so it was Darren and Kelly and Mark and Aram and Bob went to the National Association of Bar Executives and Pam Robinson, right? And Pam, who was honored as well. We also had Ellen and I attended the National Conference of Bar Presidents meeting. We were fortunate also to have two diversity scholars that came to that from the DC area, and that included Shirley Diaz, who's the Hispanic Bar Association president, and Leanne Van Tull, who's currently the Washington Bar Association president. There were a number of great meetings. I have a couple agenda here, items here, like if you guys want to see sort of what took place at the ABA, or so I thought I'd just pass this around and people could see, you know, what went on. And one of the most interesting things that came out of the meeting was the AI task force that President Mary Smith has started. We have a number of DC Bar members that are on that committee. Lucy Thompson is the chair, and Lauren Podesky, yes, is a vice chair, and also Jim Sandman and others are also on that committee. That's relevant to us because we want to play a role with these great members of the bar that are part of this national effort, which ties into yesterday's great program we had, thanks to Dennis and his team at CLE, entitled, what was it, the title for the program? The DC Bar Artificial Intelligence and Chatbot Summit. And so we wanted to show you guys that these are leaders of this national effort. And so we'll be working with them to figure out how the DC Bar can best play a role with their efforts to communicate nationwide about this effort. Their goal is to, I guess, that President Smith has challenged them to have a report ready by the next ABA annual meeting this summer. And so on that note, I thought that Rob, one of my goals was to have you guys meet and know not only the ABA delegates that are elected by the DC Bar, but also the other delegates that are DC Bar members. But I couldn't organize that in time. But we do have Mary Smith, if you guys will, I'll go over this later, but at our March meeting of 2024, Mary Smith will be here, the ABA president. And so I think we could combine efforts and get our DC Bar representatives of the ABA Board of Governors, as well as Lucy and Lori are excited as well about the fact that she's coming. And I think we can do a meeting or have part of our meeting be about some of these national issues. So on that note, I think Rob, you're on. Are you there?
He's here.
Yes, I'm here.
Yeah, Rob. So why don't you just give your report. And also it was great to have the Attorney General. I was excited to walk with him down for the formality of our delegation. If you could just share that with the group, and we know that this is, I think, your last report to us, but we want to thank you for your service on that, and as well as just telling the board all that went on and how things went.
Sure. Well, the ABA meeting had a great deal to offer. One of the highlights before the House of Delegates met was the award of the ABA Medal to Fred Gray, who is an icon of the civil rights movement. Martin Luther King called him the chief counsel of the movement. Gray represented Rosa Parks during the Montgomery bus boycott in 1955, and he was still at it in 1965, representing marchers from Selma to Montgomery. And he is in his 90s, still going very strong, and gave a wonderful acceptance speech for the medal. The House of Delegates met on the 7th and 8th. And as Charles noted, the Attorney General addressed the House. He talked to us about the war crimes in the Ukraine and the commitment of the Justice Department to seeing justice done in pursuing the perpetrators of those war crimes. The tradition is when there is an esteemed member of the delegation who is addressing the House, like the Attorney General, the delegation escorts that person down to the Speaker's dais, which we did. And I think everyone enjoyed that and was really impressed by the Attorney General's speech. The House was very busy. We adopted 47 resolutions. An additional 5 were withdrawn, which is usually a sign that the sponsor has calculated that the resolution is headed toward defeat. There are a number of bread and butter resolutions where the ABA serves the important function of setting standards for various aspects of legal practice or education. For example, there was a resolution 502 from the criminal justice section that adopted 14 principles to govern plea bargaining. Resolution 503 from the criminal justice section set forth standards on the treatment of prisoners designed to eliminate hard labor and involuntary servitude as punishment. Resolution 603 from the Committee on Legal Aid and Indigent Defendants adopted 10 principles for a public defense delivery system. And then Resolution 100, which was probably the most controversial provision, amended Rule 1.6 of the Model Rules of Professional Conduct regarding the obligation to decline or terminate a representation. The new rule imposes a continuing obligation of reasonable inquiry by a lawyer to satisfy themselves that their services are not being used for illegal or fraudulent purposes. And the authors of the resolution were concerned that if the ABA did not make this change to deal with clients using lawyers to facilitate money laundering and terrorist financing, the Treasury Department would impose such requirements on us. Now, when the ABA adopts a model rule of professional conduct, it goes to each state for consideration. So the DC Court of Appeals will be considering, if it is not already, whether to adopt this change. Now, there were several other resolutions, a lot of other resolutions, that are controversial nationally, but were not controversial in the House. These kinds of resolutions are potentially important because the ABA has a significant lobbying arm, but it can only lobby on issues where the House has articulated policy. And the ABA also files amicus briefs with the Supreme Court and other appellate courts, and that same limitation applies. So just to highlight a few of those, Resolution 509 from the Section of Civil Rights and Social Justice supported the principle that judicial review of FDA decisions should defer to the agency's expertise and decision-making authority. That resolution was clearly directed at the Alliance decision that set aside FDA decisions on the abortion-inducing drug, mifepristone. Resolution 511, also from the Civil Rights section, urged Congress to enact the Women's Health Protection Act to protect access to abortion care without medically unnecessary restrictions. And Resolution 515 from same section opposed bans on books in public education and school libraries. Thousands of books have been removed from school libraries by self-designated parents groups. Basically anything that talks about sexual orientation or gender identity in some jurisdictions, but I also noted some corrupting books like the biographies of Susan B. Anthony and Rosa Parks. A few additional interesting resolutions. Resolution 608 from the Cybersecurity Legal Task Force urges legislation establishing a duty to implement reasonable security for an organization's data, products, and systems. Relatedly, Resolution 609 urged lawyers to keep informed about emerging technologies and to protect digital systems. And then Resolution 610 urged law schools to incorporate cybersecurity into their and emerging technologies into their curricula. And finally, there was an interesting resolution adopted arguing that law schools should permit students to obtain credit or monetary compensation for serving as law review editors. It's sort of like the NCAA getting a lot of free talent, though not nearly as lucrative. There are other resolutions I'd be happy to address if there are any questions. But as your president stated, this is my last meeting reporting to you as state delegate. I've headed the delegation for 9 years, which is the term limits, three terms of 3 years. My successor is Paul Smith, who is vice president of the Campaign Legal Center and a professor at Georgetown. He's one of the most respected Supreme Court advocates in the country and has previously served as a DC bar delegate. And I dare say you're receiving a substantial upgrade. I've also served in the House almost continuously since the mid-1990s and may go back again in some different capacity. But in those years, the membership of the ABA has declined dramatically. And the organization has been operating at a financial deficit for years. And we need to right that ship, because despite all its problems, the ABA still continues to fill a critical need as the organization speaking for the legal profession and, importantly, as an advocate for the rule of law. If not the ABA, who's going to meet that need on a national level, and not meeting it at a time when democracy is in peril is truly not an option. So I urge you to do whatever you can to help the APA continue in that role. It's been a pleasure doing these reports for you, and I look forward to continuing to serve the bar in whatever capacity I can. Thank you.
So, as a just point of information, Rob is Courtney's dad.
So
people may not
my know. Proudest accomplishment.
Thanks.
Thank you so much, Rob, for all your work and support. And also, you were DC Bar president just a few years ago, right?
1995, 96. Well, maybe before some of you were born.
But thank you so much for your report and for all your work. Really appreciate it.
Sure, it's a labor of love.
Okay, I think we'll do two things. One is I just want to give you all an advance. On your desk, I've set a flyer here. This is one I'm very interested in having all of us come out and support the Lawyers Have Heart. So May 18th, if you guys can hold that date. I'm asking you to hold a number of different dates, and I hope you'll be amenable to that. We had, I think there's a picture, Akil, of the team that came out for the Lawyers Have Heart. And we have an opportunity, Darren, right, to, there's lots of law firms, there are lots of people, but I thought that the DC Bar hopefully can have a bigger presence. And we're growing in terms of our numbers. I think there were 60 people there, but we would like to have more. So I just ask that you guys consider that, holding that day. And also, there's an opportunity to contribute monies as well for that effort. And it would be great just to have as many of us show up. Because I think that, as Bernisa told me, many of the people that showed up are our staff people, but we'd like to have our members show up. Darren pointed out that sometimes our members go to where their place of employment, but perhaps we can peel some of those off to come. Be part of the DC Bar. And so I just wanted to mention that as well as we talked about August, September, we talked about the AEI report and what happened yesterday. October, we have that president's dinner on the 28th, and you guys will get that, save the date for that. On the 31st, I've had a long talk with Sally, and we know that it's very important that we address the issue regarding the Washington Lawyer. And we're also going to talk about the letter that Justin Dillon sent to all of us. We'll probably have a discussion and some talk about that and what our role is there. So that's our special meeting. You know, the holidays will be upon us soon. We have our meeting in December. In March, please try to come to that meeting that Mary Smith will be attending on March 12th. And then it'll be April, May. Sean will be raising money for the DC Bar Pro Bono Center, and we have the Lawyers Have Heart, and then we're into June. I'm sure it'll go by really fast. So I just wanted to give you guys that.
And just a little, Mary Smith is a DC Bar member. So just kind of one of our own who's ABA president, or at least we claim her as one of our own. And she acknowledges her tie to DC, and we were fortunate she was able to come last year for our voluntary bar leadership group meeting, which is the monthly meeting that we have of all the voluntary bar leadership group, and stayed for a cocktail party, and it was great to have her here. So it will be wonderful to have her come and speak to the Board of Governors.
It'll be great. We really want you all to be there. So anyway, I think we'll now turn to, our Janine is on, I think. Are you there, Janine? Is she gone? I think she's gone.
She may have stepped away.
Yeah, she might have stepped away. If she should come back, we'll do an introduction. I'd like her to introduce herself to everyone. But in the meantime, we'll move to the consent agenda, which was tab 3 in the materials that you all received. There's a lot of information there, the secretary's report, also the committee assignments for communities, BLE, governance, innovation and legal practice, judicial evaluation, lawyer assistance, and leadership development. And then also the appointment of the DC Bar Secretary. So I had a talk with Steve Miller about that, and also Roger, Diane, and Courtney. And we found a volunteer in Roger to do the effort of secretary. But he'll be having some help from DC Bar staff, as we understand it. And this is the first year we'll have this sort of arrangement of volunteer secretary from the existing board governors. So anyway, all of that is, and also the appointments to the DC Bar Foundation Board of Directors, all of that is in the consent agenda. Just wanted you all to know a little bit more about it. So I need a motion to approve the consent agenda as
included. So moved.
It's been moved. I need a second.
Second.
The moved and seconded that the consent agenda that's listed in tab 3 be accepted by the DC Bar Board of Governors. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? So the motion carries and the consent agenda is consented. So now I will turn to Alicia for the treasurer's report.
All right. Good afternoon again, everyone. So we do have a PowerPoint to assist us. So I'm reporting on the preliminary year-end financial results for the bar for the period ending in June 2023. The good news is we have a year-to-date surplus from operations for the year, and our finances remain solid. So here are the key takeaways for the year. So we're looking at the first slide here. The bar ended up with a year with a surplus from operations of $872,000, which was better than what we budgeted by $1.2 million. For the year, revenue was up $40.9 million, which was more than budgeted by 1%, and expenses were $40 million, which was less than what we budgeted by 2%. The increase in net assets of $4.9 million is the result of the $872,000 surplus from operations, plus investment gains of $1.6 million and the positive $2.6 million change in the valuation of the interest swap, minus a net $117,000 in client security fund disbursements. The positive swap valuation means that if we decided to prepay the $49.3 million building mortgage that we owe, the bank would pay us $2.6 million. However, if it was reversed and if we had a negative $2.6 million change in the swap, we would owe the bank that $2.6 million. As a reminder, we are required to show this potential penalty in our asset on our financials based on the generally accepted accounting principles. Moving on to slide 2, license fee funded activities for the year show a surplus of $97,000. Which was better than what we budgeted by $755,000. Expenses were less than budget by 2%. And we continue to see savings in personnel costs and savings attributable to the pandemic, including travel, food and beverage, building management, and supplies costs. Other fees and services expense reflect costs relating to the building's loans refinancing, including the swap breakage costs. The one-time charges were necessary to end up with favorable terms with this refinancing. Credit card and ACH fees expected in late fiscal year 22, we saw it shift into fiscal year 23. As mentioned earlier, we also had a higher than budgeted revenue related to the reinstatement and late fees. And more new admits than we had expected. Moving on to slide 3. For non-license fee funded activities, communities had a deficit of $65,000 from operations, which was worse than budgeted by $68,000. Communities revenue during license renewal lagged 28% because of the inability to pre-populate the membership on the license renewal invoices for fiscal year 2023. Before our current license renewal season for fiscal year 24, where community renewals were much higher because it was corrected. Despite this, communities was able to find significant expense savings, primarily in personnel vacancies to mitigate this revenue shortfall. CALEs had a surplus of $74,000 from operations, which was $69,000 better than budget. Actual revenue was less than budgeted, primarily due to reduced sponsorship revenue. Within admissions and registration revenues, sales of CLE passports sold during the fiscal year 24 license renewal season was very popular, which helped to mitigate lower event registrations. Cost savings in most expense categories helped to partially offset the negative variance due to budget for revenue. And then slide three, the overall CLE program, which included the mandatory course and rules education, generated surplus from operations of $503,000, which was a $432,000 better than what we had budgeted. Other non-license fee funded activities, which are primarily certificates of good standing, studio and conference room rentals to third parties, and royalties related to member benefit affinity programs, generated a surplus of $765,000 from operations, which was $424,000 more than we budgeted. Overall, revenue was better than expected by 32%, which includes a $145,000 return in studio revenue from outside clients and $72,000 related to the room rental for the July 2022 and February 2023 bar exams. Coupled with lower than budgeted expenses by 35%, this drove the surplus for other non-license fee funded activities. And then finally, on slide four, we had $116 million in total assets. Our cash balance was $21 million and our investments balance was $16.2 million at the end of the fiscal year. Compared to the same time last year, our cash increased by $7.5 million, reflecting the benefit of our refinance mortgage at a lower interest rate, along with the timing of license renewals. Our investment increased by $1.6 million. That's an 11% increase in the value of our portfolio. The target return for our portfolio is between 5 and 6%, and we achieved 11% with the help of our investment advisors, of course. The new balance of our building's mortgage, which comes due in August 2037, was $49.3 million. This new mortgage consolidates our two previous loans at a lower rate, provides for less restrictive loan covenants, and larger working capital line of credit. This concludes my report of the DC Bar's performance for the 2023 fiscal year.
Thank you. Any questions, Alicia?
I don't have a question necessarily, but a comment on the communities piece. It was interesting during the communities committee meeting last week, the information that was sent out about the membership in the different communities. I think that the decision that was made to move to the buy one, get the rest free approach is having a significant impact in driving up communities membership. The data that you share with us, Pam, showed that as of last year, I think we had about 10,300 individuals who had signed up for a community. And as of this year, as of last week or 2 weeks ago, it's about 15,000. So it's like a 50% boost in membership, and people can still sign up. And we're still encouraging participation in the early career lawyers community. Charles and I have started talking to the law schools about the law students community. So I just wanted to point out, because that was the one area where the numbers weren't quite maybe what we were hoping for, but I think that the decisions we've made will help turn that around quite a bit.
Okay, well, thank you. Janine, are you back? Are you back? I saw her picture. Okay, I think we'll now go to the CEO report.
Hey, everyone, just sitting in for Bob and Matt today. We had a family issue come up. Just a few highlights, and we've gone over so much already. Especially the ABA in Denver. The DC Bar had quite a showing. My folks know that I love when they win awards, because it's not that I don't know that they're working hard and doing great stuff, but I want the rest of the nation to know it. And they do. So for instance, the National Association of Bar Executives, which is the meeting before the ABA actually starts their meeting, in which when all executives get together, awarded Pam Robinson the President's Award for her year in the Dan and Caitlin in the Practice Management Advisory Service under Carla from in the Regulation Council Department won the coveted Gambrels Award for its series on financial management of small firms, which of course we know is one of the most important things when it comes to avoiding disciplinary matters. And then not to be left out, our own Dennis Cuevas, during the executive only Inner Circle meeting, won the award for the passport program and the new paralegal certificate program, both of which substantially exceeded that. The passport program has now, we're now at 2,365 memberships sold. That's $366,000 that we didn't have, that we now have. I mean, it's just because Dennis and Meredith on the marketing communication side, and Katarina on the IT side, were able to attach the passports to our dues or license fee renewal statements. And certainly not to be left out, Adriana Zick with the Abramson Award, the 50th anniversary celebration from last year, and the team she led. So thank you, Adriana, for being here. And by the way, the community's membership, Sean, thank you for teeing that up, because it's actually up 62% with 15,281 memberships, including a breakout year we've had with the premium package. So we're up over 1,400 now with those. And of course, the early career lawyers community, Alan, we are at 634. So we're doing really well there. And we're ahead of budget already. We're already ahead of budget by 177,000. So forget that deficit up there that I just showed you as of June 30th. We're cranking it. All right. The AI summit yesterday was great. We had almost 100 folks in person. Bill Eskridge was our keynote speaker. He's the AI guru at Yale. You might have seen him on CNN. We thought he did a very good job. The ABA task force chair we mentioned is Lucy Thompson, one of our former BOG members. 15 of the 50 members of the ABA's task force are us, our DC Bar members, our like luminaries too, like leadership folks like Laura and Lucy and Jim Sandman. And they want to have their meetings here at the building since so many of them are in the area. And of course, we're gonna do that. So even though we're not co-branded, we're still gonna play a significant role ABA's AI task force. On the operations side, kudos to the facilities and MVP teams for now fully transitioning us back to in-person programming, including hosting the bar exam this summer. In fact, the schedule for the building is so full these days, it's hard to get a meeting room, you know, when we come up with a new program. So that's all good. I mean, a lot of landlords in this city can't say the same things. So very pleased with that. And of course, you know, none of the accomplishments that I mentioned, passports, communities, and otherwise, would be possible without our colleagues in IT, communication, marketing, and really just a joint effort across the bar. So I'm very happy to give this report, but I do prefer Bob doing it. So next month, he'll be doing it again. Next month. Thank you.
Okay, we're at 2:01. The time we committed was 12 to 2. We're almost there. We have two more reports. Diane, you're up on the annual report for the Continuing Legal Aid Education Committee, and then Marg will be up, and then we'll be adjourned.
I am going to speed read and talk faster than normal. So I promise you those two things, and I got to thank Dennis for teeing up what I'm about to tell you. A lot of it is in tab 7, but some is not. I chair the committee, so it does have a little extra special place in my heart. But the bragging rights go to everyone. We did have a really good year fiscally, so this is good. We offered 154 classes in more than 20 practice areas this fiscal year. 12% of them were in the in-person format, had some mixed results. We still have people who just don't want to come back to the building. We noodle on this all the time. We can't always figure it out. Some had strong in-person attendance, some did not, but the main thing that's important is people are still attending. Yeah. We're just trying to get into their brains to figure out what we could do to get them more in person. We do continue to work on that. Dennis did point out when we offer the only the in-person format only without an online option, registration's not great. That's our only bad news. And it's not even bad news, just weird news to me anyway. Okay, so we offered more than 115 on-demand courses during the last fiscal year, 1,385 purchases. On-demand sales were down just over 4% from the previous fiscal year, which was less than our webinar attendance. So again, we think that people, the attorneys, enjoy the flexibility of completing CLE requirements on their own time. And we're just going to go with that, whether we, you know, prefer that or not. We really have to meet everyone where they are. And that seems to be what's going on. Of our 154 classes, a quarter of them, which is 38, were new. And those are important because they improve lawyer competence. We give training in developing practice areas, AI, chatbot, which thank you for talking about it so I don't have to do it myself. Although, again, super proud of what happened yesterday. And this does give us new registrants and it gives us, you know, more choices for people who are coming back. So some of the new classes we developed were in litigation, contracts, ethics, technology, IP, health law, employment law. Obviously, AI and chatbot was a big deal. We collaborated and we expanded our collaboration with outside organizations and with DC Bar communities to give a number of highly successful and well-attended programs. So some of the partnerships we had were with the American College of Legal Medicine, the Government Blockchain Association, the Federal Bar Association, the TEGE Exempt Organization Council, and Vaccine Law, I don't know how to pronounce this word, academia. I didn't say that out loud before this. So members of academia in vaccine law is what I would say. So those were just a couple of examples. And again, because I promised I would speed talk, I will not say all of them, but there were many. Other numbers. For this past fiscal year, attendance was 6,267, slightly down 8% from the previous fiscal year. We had 7,100 attendees. And we think that's the reason is because some jurisdictions have biennial reporting. So if we take into account webinar, in-person, and on-demand courses, our program processed more than 5,000 CLE certificates, pretty good for a jurisdiction that does not have mandatory CLE, I might add. And the most requested states for CLE credit are Virginia, Pennsylvania, New Jersey, New York, and California. So speaking of our members, more than 320 DC Bar members and other attorneys served as volunteer CLE faculty, a lot of people. And of those people, 117 were new. So we're you know, obviously we have the people who've been doing this for a long time and trying to recruit new faculty is important too. We don't just want it to be the same roster and we want them to have positive and rewarding experiences. And we wanna make sure we have diversity with our faculty. And I know we've always cared about having balance with plaintiff side versus defense side at every CLE we offer. I don't think we have any complaints about any kind of imbalance about that. If so, I have not heard of them and I'm sure you have not either. Okay, good. Just want to make sure and you get the answer you like, you stop asking the question. Our CLE courses rated an average of 4.7 out of 5, which was matching last year's overall rating for CLE courses. A majority of courses were rated excellent overall. And we think a lot of this is also, first of all, our technology has been great and the people implementing it have been great over the past number of years. But also attorneys have gotten really comfortable in teaching online and in making sure that the programs are interactive. You know, it can be very hard when you're looking at a Zoom page full of screens with no live people interacting with you. I know that's my least favorite part of teaching online. But we're really trying to encourage people, can't mandate that the camera be on, but we at least are telling our attorneys, here's how to handle it or to encourage people or how to deal with it when it's not. It is very weird to look at a screen for hours with no human emotion coming back to you. And so we deal with that. We talked about some of the special programs and the highlight again, I know that you mentioned it, Darren, the paralegal and the legal assistant program. I really feel like I got to say one more thing about that because that's been a big deal. Our program, our committee launched its first ever training specifically geared towards paralegals and legal assistants. And the program was developed by attorneys and experienced paralegals. It was 3 full day training sessions And they did legal writing. They did a session on legal research, discovery, and case management. And then they did a third session on the anatomy of a case, negotiation, and legal ethics. And the people who registered would do some on-demand courses in certain specific practice areas that they chose. And we originally planned that the program would be for 25 paralegals. We had such overwhelmingly positive response that we expanded it to accommodate 65. So that's like a big deal. I thought I should mention that. I had nothing to do with that. So that's why I don't feel like it's, but it has to be mentioned. And so we're going to do this again and in the spring of 2024. And we'll, as long as there's interest, we will continue to offer it. Okay, last part, money. Our preliminary financial statements for this fiscal year, we ended with a healthy surplus of $73,647. And in candor, for most of the fiscal year, our revenue was, putting this word in quotes, anemic, because we had deficits for a lot of the year. But we launched this specially priced passport during the license renewal season, and we erased the deficit and came up with this surplus that I just told you about. At first, we projected 1,000 passport sales, but we were pleasantly surprised to have sold more than 2,400 passports. So that was more than double the initial projection. And then we have surplus investment income. So the total surplus for the year is $157,766. So we are fiscally sound. And we had a good year. We have new programs. Again, the AI chatbot summit's a big deal. And Dennis or I can answer any questions, but I think we are optimistic.
Yeah.
Feeling good. Talking fast. Sorry. So.
Thank you, Diane. If there are no questions, we'll turn to Marg. Yes.
This should be easy peasy.
Yes. Proposed investment committee chart.
Correct. So it was on the agenda last meeting. We made some clarifying language in the charter, which was part of the meeting material. So I'm just going to say it's the consolidation of the pension committee into the investment committee, and the staff retirement committee will be overseen by investment. That's pretty much a summary of what's in the charter. I turn it back over to you.
Okay, so we have those that are found with tab A. So that's an action item. So I need a motion to accept the proposed investment committee chart. So,
Second.
It's been moved and seconded that we accept the proposed investment committee charter. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? I think we're at the end of our program. It's 2:11. That's not too bad for your time. We really appreciate it. We do have a compensation committee. One of the issues or things that I'm concerned about is having a contract for Bob, because we go through this every year. So we're going to have a compensation committee meeting briefly after this meeting and hopefully start that process. But Bob, you're still on. Are you there? I just wanted to, we missed you. I just wanted to know if you had any words you want to share with us since you listened to our whole meeting.
Yeah, no. The meeting went smoothly and seamlessly, which just proves you don't need me after all. But no, but kudos to everybody. It was a great report. And really, you know, other bar associations are not doing nearly as well financially as the DC bar. So I think that you all and the staff should take great pride in returning yet another very successful fiscal year. You know, having a surplus, having a huge increase in net assets, having realized the benefits of refinancing the building, all of which are really terrific accomplishments. The programmatic decisions that we made at the end of last year are really paying off. So I think, again, kudos and congrats to everybody all around for a very successful financial year.
Well, there being no further business, this is my second meeting. So I thank you all for coming, and we're going to have a smaller group. But then I hope to see you all on October 31st on Halloween, I know. But we have some important issues that we'll really make time to discuss
there. And there'll be candy, Sean?
It's a regular
meeting.
Regular meeting.
Okay.
Diane.
No, I said, will there be candy? Since it's we just want to incentivize everybody.
Candy corn.
Right.
Oh, right.
No. But thank you all for coming.
Thanks, Charles.
Thank you, Charles. Thank you very much.